the United Healthcare CEO. Y'all saw that news story?
Yep.
Assassinated. I didn't see it. I keep hearing about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's online.
Some dude in all black with the face mask and the hood and all that stepped out of the alley in front of a Hilton Hotel in New York and assassinated him.
They say he was eating Starburst.
They found like a water bottle and candy wrappers in the alley.
What does that do to the Starburst brand? Does that do anything to their brand?
Nobody said it was Starburst.
They get more credibility.
This is not a Nook and Cranium exclusive.
It isn't.
We don't know what kind of candy.
We don't know what kind of candy he had.
No, we're just going to doubt that I got the scoop, huh?
He was eating alligators and he was drinking a Le Bleu.
I got all my information from Blue Sky.
So what's up with this, though? Like, why are they knocking off, the healthcare, health insurance CEOs? What's going on with that?
I don't know. I didn't do a deep dive, but I kind of went around on there and saw if I could figure out anything, and there was nothing really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least they haven't figured anything out yet. And I couldn't find any like stories where he had done anything particularly bad to anyone but
it's a lot of gossip.
I don't know. I mean, it's an insurance company. Who knows what he does? I read that he was the CEO. I don't know if he still is or was the CEO of part of the organization that deals with Medicare and maybe like later in life health insurance.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's still a thing, but I was reading about that. He made $20 million in stock moves this year.
Okay. That's a lot of moves. He's a CEO, though. Is he like, what is that for somebody like that? Is that a lot of money for him?
I don't know. That's like half of his net worth.
Okay. So, it's a lot. It would be a lot of money for him.
That's like a substantial amount of activity for this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody I work with said that the bullet casings had engravings on them.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they were, but
so that's personal, or either the assassin wanted to make it look like it was personal.
The officials are saying, like, all right, this was not a professional because a professional wouldn't have made these mistakes. And I'm thinking, or would a professional intentionally make mistakes so you would think it's not a professional?
Right. That's, counterintelligence.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends, though. Like, how does it pan out? Did these mistakes actually lead to...
Did they leave somebody else's candy wrapper?
It's a possibility. He's still not caught.
It breeds some sweet tooth bandit in, and he's not the right one.
The best camera footage of them is from Starbucks. They went to a Starbucks.
Well, you see his face pretty good.
Mask up to here, went to Starbucks.
If they pulled the mask a little further, that would have like disguised them a lot more.
I know. You could see like he's got like a crooked nose or something. That narrows it down quite a bit.
Yeah, it doesn't look like he cared. Look like he's going to go somewhere far away to not have to worry about anything.
Unless he was really professional, and that wasn't even his real nose. You just
disguise
nutty, was one of them shows, like Nutty Professor, Miss Doubtfire, or something where they make somebody look like somebody else.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. It could be
a president mask.
You never know.
That'd be pretty elaborate.
That's fine.
That would be pretty elaborate, but I mean, like he's showing up on video footage from other places. He's going to keep making mistakes. And if there was something personal about it,
yeah,
there's going to be a trail.
Yeah.
They're going to find out what personal vendetta he had
right
against this guy.
find something in some DM or I don't know.
They've already found out, like, I read something else today. Like, you have these apps for messaging that advertise being encrypted end-to-end. Only end users can see the content, blah, blah, blah. It's cool and all. You know, your little everyday run-of-the-mill person can't hack in there and see your messages. Cool, if you need that. But apparently there's this one app that costs thousands of dollars because it's the most secure encrypted end-to-end. I guess the European Union, one of their law enforcement organizations, just hacked into it.
Wow. Yeah. That didn't surprise me.
Listened and looked at a whole bunch of people's like very serious criminal activity.
Not so safe.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, like, if you're trying to hide something and so it's like, here's a scenario. You're in a building and there's something hazardous in the building that someone is trying to hide. And everyone keeps their stuff in the lockers, but one lock is just over the edge, you know, elaborate, all the dings and whistles. Maybe they use like titanium on the lock or something. Okay. So like, where is the stuff being hidden? You know, The obvious place is the place with all the extra security, you know, titanium lock or whatever.
Definitely not the app.
I think hiding in plain sight is probably like the smarter thing if you can truly hide in plain sight.
Oh, I'm sure plenty of criminal organizations are running right in plain sight.
Absolutely.
Successfully than the ones that paid the thousands of dollars to hide their drug trafficking schemes. And
yeah,
like, they made several arrests. Oh, and they recovered at least hundreds of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollar equivalents.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is that, like, if I ran a spy agency, right? If I was headed as, you know, I don't necessarily have to be head, but if I was in the CIA or, you know, some country spy agency.
Look out.
And I wanted to... And I wanted to bait the criminals into giving me their secrets, I would just create a corporation that keeps the secrets safe. And I'd have my own back door into it. You know,
how'd you get all those secrets? They just gave them to me. They just gave me all the secrets.
Right on my secure server, you know.
That's all you need.
Yeah. They're all saved right here. They saved them themselves.
And it's secure.
Truth will always find itself to light. That's what I think.
One way or another.
Especially if you're trying to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're trying to hide it.
Right.
If you just got something that no one's interested in, that's another thing. If you're like trying to hide something, it kind of goes with that that principle of what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just that.
That's funny. It reminds me of, I don't know why it reminds me of this, but we watched a comedian on TV and she's gay and her wife plans their honeymoon in the Maldives and put them on a flight with a layover in Qatar. And in both of those countries, being gay is very illegal.
Yeah. So how did that play out?
Right, did they make it out?
they asked for a room with two beds. That's what they did.
They were smart. It was like, we know what we're getting into.
Me and my cousin are coming to hang out in the Maldives.
Right. My closest cousin, we share everything. Yeah. Put your best game face on out there. They do not play.
But the reason I thought about that is because she said that they were asking, like, they'd go to check in at the hotel and they're asking the question, how many beds would you like? And she's like, she shouldn't be allowed to answer those questions because she gives too much information. Two beds. None of that gay stuff happened in here. Offering up all these details, even if they're not accurate details that just don't need to be spilled.
We kept the lights on. So.
We kept the lights on.
That's funny. Yeah,
that is funny. When the gift of gab ain't such a gift.
Right.
The curse of gab.
Welcome, everybody, to the Nook and Cranium Podcast.
Welcome, welcome.
This is episode number 7.
Nope.
6. This is episode number 6.
I was about to say, wow.
moving right along. We wanted to get together and talk about whatever. But the idea is to talk about how technology over the years has evolved in a way that's affected people's mental health, or at least how we see it. Hit that like, subscribe, follow the channel. Grab our website.
You can put it up there somewhere.
Visit our website, nookandcranium.com, all spelled out. You go on there, you can see some of our merch. Let's get into it.
All right.
Indeed.
Today we're talking about, what are we talking about?
Good old technology.
We're talking about good old technological innovation. The disruption of it all.
Not just the bad stuff. Technology's also brought a lot of good things to the table.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more good things.
Yeah. I think it's maybe like all in how you use it, you know.
Correct.
Like maybe it's not built in good or bad. It's just like, how can you allow your creative intelligence to utilize the tools which you are given?
Yeah, most of the technology we use, it becomes bad or negatives once we get into the overutilization phase. And so that was, most of the stuff that I looked up was pretty much that, how it affects our bones, our health, and our mental.
It's so multifaceted. If you really think about it, we got these smartphones that are just full of all this information that we don't have the capacity to handle at any given point of the day, but there we are looking through it. And then family members you don't want to hear from, or people, or boss, or somebody calls you on that phone.
Bam.
Right. You overuse that phone, like you were saying. So you wear that phone out, and they are not cheap.
Right.
You don't want the cheap ones.
Want the cheap ones.
No.
The old ones.
You don't want the cheap ones. You try to charge them. Like, my phone is like 200 degrees. What's going on with this thing?
Been at 17% for 25 minutes.
And so the average person, it said that from the moment they wake up to the time they go to sleep, they are using some sort of device or some sort of technology. And the top three are your phone, laptop, and then music, utilization of some sort of headphones or earbuds.
Yeah. We're all guilty right now.
Yep. Every single last one of every device is being used.
Oh yeah. But see, that's the good side of it. And so it's like, now we're doing this podcast from three different locations. Able to sync up online, sync up our audio with our headphones, with the microphone. But, the same thing make you laugh, same thing make you cry, right? Like the same technology we could utilize to our benefit could also work towards our detriment.
Right.
Especially when we're just poorly adapted to that technological innovation.
Or it stops working and you got to buy another one.
Yeah. Sometimes that's built into the technology.
Yep.
What do you call it? Built-in obsolescence.
Oh, yeah. Planned obsolescence.
Planned obsolescence. Yeah.
I know it was only a few weeks ago, right before we were going to get together and record like this. I was on the laptop moving files around. Screen just went black. Just died completely. I'm like, what's going on? This thing's plugged in.
Yeah.
I thought I had lost the computer, but it ended up being just the charging adapter. I mean, the amount of anxiety that I dealt with thinking that I had to replace a computer that cost X amount.
Yeah.
Was very unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah, they ain't cheap neither. They.
No.
You don't want a cheap one.
No.
Not for processing videos and, you know, yeah, 4K and all that. You
can't use a cheap one.
Oh, no.
You can get away with the less expensive, like a desktop computer, but since I'm always on the move,
yeah,
I needed a laptop. And in order to process all the files and to do the editing and stuff like that, now it's got to be a good laptop.
Yeah.
The stuff don't last like it used to.
You have to. You're buying it in a time where a lot of tech stuff and chips and all that are, you know, a little bit scarcer than they might have been before.
Yeah, all that planned obsolescence, you know.
And the planned obsolescence, right?
Now you need more chips because everybody got to get a new, you know, whatchamacallit, in 2 years or whatever. It's really wasteful, I think. I like when things are built to last. And I understand, you know, like, to a certain extent, cell phones, they're like, we're wanting to put more technology in there. So, you know, we put so much technology in there that's new this year compared to the model we released 2.5 or 3 years ago. You know, we want you to have this new model that's completely different. But I feel like that was more true in the past. But now it's like, the difference is like, you got a curved screen now. It's like, so? Why'd you stop supporting the bands on my old phone? Like, I got to get a new phone now because the carrier doesn't support the bands on the phone.
That's
what's
true.
That all about? Yeah. I don't need a curved screen. Come
they,
on.
They do a new version of the phone every year now.
Yeah.
Every single year is a new version of the phone.
Yeah, at least.
Whichever phone you got, there's a new version of it.
Yeah.
You get a phone and they're like, okay, you're going to get operating system updates for 3 years, or you're going to get 3 operating system updates or 5 or whatever it is. And then once you reach that point where you've received your 5th update, every subsequent update after that, your apps are less and less compatible with the phone you have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then eventually the apps are going to require things your phone can't do. And then you just can't use those apps on there anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Apps, they're 128 bits now. Your 64 bits operating system doesn't work, you know.
Download whole video games on them now. Crazy.
Oh, man. The old phones, a lot of times the audio was better. It was definitely louder. You know, how I remember it, the old flip phones before they got smart. And the battery, man, the battery lasts you forever on those things. Like you did not have to charge your phone every day. You charge it every week.
Yeah, I used to have a dedicated work phone. And it wasn't a flip. It was like a slider. It had like a keyboard in the hidden underneath half, and it would slide out.
Yeah.
That phone, I would charge it up and it would just stay on for a week.
Yeah. That's the Neo in the Matrix phone when he gets the package and he like takes it out the box, and then the little keypad just slides out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is Morpheus, all that. But those were cool. Those lasted. They were for a phone, you need to be able to hear the person on the other side, and they need to be able to hear you. That's like the most important part of a phone.
Right.
But a lot of these smartphones have terrible mics and terrible speakers. and I'm just on there like, what? Huh? Can you say that again? 50 iterations later, and I still can't hear the guy on the other end. Oh, what's going on?
Yeah. Now everybody's got earbuds that they're using to listen to on the phones. So there's a little speaker on there doesn't have to be any better than it was 3 iterations of the phone ago.
And a lot of people are losing them.
Losing the earbud, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Losing them and the rebuy. I hear very often how many times people have lost one and you have to replace it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You lean over to like scratch your neck or something and it falls out of your ear. It lands in the gutter and you're like, oh, done deal. Another $200 or whatever those things cost, you know.
Guy I work with had him in like the hoodie pocket.
Yeah. Oh, that's
when he went to the bathroom and they fell out into the toilet.
Oh, did he get him out?
Yes.
Ew.
They're like $200 or something like that.
Oh, man. Had to scoop him out of the public toilet. That's disgusting.
I don't know if it was a public toilet. It might have been a public toilet.
Oh.
But it was a toilet nonetheless.
Yeah, it's already bad enough.
Count me out.
It probably wasn't bleached between the time he used it and the time he dropped the stuff in it. I mean.
Yeah, probably not, right?
No, that's funny.
Yeah, he's going to need to clean that thing really good. Like, really good. Like little cleaning, tiny cleaning tools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, disinfectant, UV light. You know, ozone treatment, he's going to have to get that thing clean. I'd probably just throw them away, just flush them.
I don't know how he cleaned them. I don't know what he did, but I know I see him at work with them hanging out of his ears.
He probably didn't do much of nothing.
Right, you know.
He made a good point beforehand about how dirty our earbuds are anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You just keep shoving them in your ear, and then you put them in your pocket. You set them on the table. You set them on the table at a public place where everybody else's hands have been.
Yeah.
You just shove it back in your ear again.
Yeah. And then you might share them with somebody. Hey, they want to talk to you.
Right.
You know.
Like, take it out your ear, put it in somebody else's.
There's a wax on it.
Might as well be a wet willy.
Hey, yeah, I'm back. You know.
Well, something interesting I learned with us having like devices, and you know, it can affect your hearing. Your hearing has it's like a system that your hearing has that throws off your equilibrium. So the worse your hearing gets, the more prone you are to falls. And
yeah,
I was like, wow, that's crazy.
This the vestibular system.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, if that gets off, like you get a little teetery tottery, lose your sense of balance.
People with hearing loss, I think, tend to have more frequency of vertigo.
Yeah, that's wild. The vestibular system is very interesting. And how I know part of how it functions is like with the teeth and how the brain is sensing the world around itself. There's a book I didn't read, but it was a guy on YouTube talking about the book and the vestibular system and how he was helping people with different issues, and he would use different therapies. He would have like dental things that would kind of help them with the teeth pressure that's supposed to help their vestibular system, and then something else with rhythm that allowed the vestibular system to work more efficiently, you know, by getting someone to like dance to a rhythm or something. I got to look it up. It was very interesting. Find out what book that was.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Talking about hearing, we were at the airport. It's been several months ago now. But there was somebody off to the side, and they had over the earmuffs on. And they were in a different terminals, not different terminal. They were in a different gates seating area. But you could hear the drone of the sound from their headphones.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you walked close to them, you could hear the drums, like the heavy metal that they were listening to.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I could only imagine how loud they were to them.
It was like from a distance, you can hear it.
Mm-hmm. And they had like cushioned over the ear headphones on.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like the old ones that we used to wear on a school bus that just like sit right on your ear and you just hear the treble the whole time.
Right. That's funny you mentioned that. We We have to take these hearing tests every so often for work. And they give us these headphones that when you put them on, they change the shape of your head. They're so tight.
Oh, man.
But they're made of like hard rubber and wood. So it just like crushes your head into this weird discombobulation. You just like you got to see moving it around. You're like, did I hear the beep? I don't.
I'm picturing a repurposed toilet plunger, like two of them.
That's hilarious.
They're small. No, they're on ear.
Okay.
Headphones, but they're like this big around and it's like wood with like a rubber ring on it. And it just, they're painful. They contort your ears so you can't hear anything. But that's your hearing test.
That's the hearing test. Can you hear anything? Yes. It hurts.
I got a ringing.
Yeah, I got a ringing.
Oh, man. It's still there.
The tech is a disruption. And then you got EMFs. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's a lot of research on EMFs.
Probably not.
It's like one of those fields where it's like, for the most part, most of the people in the field where they would have an opinion, a professional opinion on that thing, they're just like, we don't really know what they do. Maybe in another 10 years. It's like,
Yeah, not enough data.
Yeah.
There's tons of data on radio waves, though.
How is this thinking about that?
What does the data say on?
That's actually one benefit to Bluetooth. Like, we don't know what Bluetooth does yet.
Yeah.
But the, you know, avoiding the radio frequency, having the phone up to your head.
Yeah.
And also the radiation. Cell phone manufacturers have to make cell phones that meet a certain radiation requirement. And there have been iterations of phones over the years that didn't meet that requirement. There was like an iPhone this and a Nokia that and stuff that were like way above and beyond what was legally allowed.
Yeah.
People still carrying them around, putting them up against their head.
Oh, yeah. While they're plugged in. While they're plugged into the wall. With everything activated. Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, NFC.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like at least with the Bluetooths, it's just, they just have Bluetooth in there. But with the phone, you've got so many different sensors and transmitters, transceivers inside.
I think it's funny that you've got all these people that are scared of government interference in your life. People in this country collectively voted in somebody whose new BFF, you know, runs Neuralink and a company that has tens of thousands of satellites in space. Not even really in space, like right on the edge of the atmosphere, to where they have to keep replacing them because they keep getting closer and burning up in the atmosphere.
Things crazy. You know, people don't think.
He's trying to get to Mars. We'll see what the Martians look like.
Can we just help him get to Mars?
Yeah. Yeah, the Neuralink thing is wild, though. Like, there's a lot of technologies that, you know, like new emerging technologies that I get excited about when I hear about, you know, hey, it's going to be cool to use that. But Neuralink, that one's like, I think I'm going to leave that alone, but at least for maybe after it's out for a few decades, I might even, you know, consider.
Pass.
It's weird. Maybe I don't entirely understand what it does. I mean, it seems very abstract because I don't know if I have analog that would really do justice exactly what it is that Neuralink does. You know, I know like Elon Musk compared it to the cell phone, but I'm like, nah, it's not like the cell phone.
I don't think they would tell us all that it does. I don't. I don't think they would tell us everything.
Yeah.
They'd be like, hey, this will help you. It'll help doctors diagnose this and this. And it'll also help us plant advertisements in your brain.
Well, yeah. I mean, once you open that door, it's like the limitation is whatever somebody could imagine that they can do with it. I mean, not anything, yeah. Of course, but if it's like a computer. We have so many different applications now to do so many different things. You know, in the beginning, they're like, we have a word processor and we can have this computer do arithmetic, you know, and then it evolved from that. And they're like, we've got arithmetic games for kids and we've got spreadsheets and we've got, you know, and it just kept growing. And now we have like GTA and Chat GPT and, you know, what do you call
it? Quantum computers now.
Quantum computers. That's another thing. That's another thing. But the interesting thing about quantum computers, I thought we'd have them a long time ago. And we're still kind of waiting. And that's one of those things like Neuralink. I'm like, I've heard about the quantum computers. They work a little differently and they're faster at this thing, these things and those things. And, you know, like decryption and stuff like that. But practically, like, what are we going to use them for? Like, what is the application of a quantum computer look like in our daily lives? Like, what could that look like?
Mining imaginary money.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. We're already doing that.
I know, but it'll do it faster.
Yeah, trying to find more efficient ways.
The thing with the mining imaginary money is that every single...
Oh, I wasn't talking about Bitcoin, by the way.
I know.
I'm talking... Okay.
but you got like this blockchain, and then you, whatever it does, decipher or encrypt or read or build or whatever. And then it does it once. And then you have to do it again, and now you do it again, but you also have to do the original data again. And then again. So the farther along that they go mining, the bigger these blockchains have gotten, the harder it is to mine, the more resources required. Like, they've shut down power grids in certain areas trying to run the equipment to mine, you know, small amounts of Bitcoin, for example.
And what's that? And dangerous.
Yeah. So I'm trying to understand with the blockchain, you have the mining, and it started at one level, but it's something is causing it to become more difficult to mine now, is what you're saying?
Here's a definition I've got right here. It says blockchain mining is the process of verifying and adding new blocks of data to a blockchain.
Okay. So every time you do it, you're taking everything that's already there and making it larger.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And so essentially you need more power to run it the larger you make it.
It's proof of work is all it is, really.
So it's the blockchain is kind of like a block train. It's adding more cars. Getting heavier and heavier.
They need more coal for it to go.
They need more coal for it to go. Yeah. They should just rename it the block train.
I might give them some ideas.
I think an interesting thing, right? Since we're talking about technology and the disruption that it creates. And how it relates to mental health, of course. And one thing I think about is how it's affecting our neurochemicals. Another way to look at it is just how it's affecting our moods, our energy. When I think about neurochemicals, I think about like dopamine or like the reward chemical or like that feeling that you get from it. Well, you can get it from for different reasons. But it's usually like you've achieved something and you get rewarded with dopamine and you feel good, you know.
Well, that's what the blockchain definition was, is a user or a miner who figures out or who verifies the blockchain gets rewarded with a token of some sort, whatever it is. And that's essentially what the computer is doing, I guess, is just verifying all the data on the blockchain and adding more data. And then the next one is verifying the information on the blockchain and adding more data.
Yeah. So where does this stop? Where's the limit? Are we eventually just going to run out of power to keep the blockchain going?
I don't know. And I guess it doesn't really matter, because if somebody pulled the plug and there was no power, there's no crypto.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's no, a lot of the other money disappears too on the cobalt system, the fiat. Yeah, a lot of the fiat.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
There's only a small percentage of our money actually exists in physical bills and coins.
Right.
And the problem with us is we don't stop. So, and we're going to milk it for all we can.
Yeah. Well, it was like built into the system because, like, you know, so we used to be on a resource based economy with the gold standard. Okay. So we don't have that now. So it's now like, what do they say? The full faith of the United States government or something like that.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. You know, it means like unlimited money creation. You know, monetize debt out the wazoo.
Seems fair.
The concept of $1 trillion is like, it's wild. It's wild when you think about it. I didn't want to get too far off how technology is affecting our reward centers, right? And how mm-hmm. we adapt to that, you know? Like, I could remember growing up wanting to go outside, play, run, climb trees, you know, build tree houses, build forts, just explore. And those things, I think, for me, have always been exciting. But I think kids don't do that as much now. And I think a big part of it is, like, we got these, you know, phones and tablets and stuff. And you know, we had video games growing up. And I know a lot of us, you know, me and some of my friends growing up, parents had to say, all right, yo, you've been on there enough. Go outside and play. You know?
Yep.
But they were scarcer. They were harder to come by.
Yeah.
And a big difference with today's games is back then we had to have the physical game.
Yeah, you had to have it. You had to have it. It couldn't have too much dust in it.
Right. It couldn't have too much dust in it. It couldn't have too many scratches on it.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Then the CDs couldn't have the scratches.
Grandma couldn't be watching the TV.
Yep.
And then they came out with handheld stuff, Game Boy, Game Gear, but it was going to run out of battery eventually. You're going to have to charge it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like, you know, that's just an earlier example of like an easy reward chemical, you know.
Oh, highs and lows.
Yeah.
You lose a round on the game and you hit a low that you wouldn't otherwise have hit, and then you win, and then you're up there producing those chemicals again.
Right. And at the end of it, you know more about the video game, but you don't know anything about life. You don't know your neighbors any better. You don't know your neighborhood any better. You hadn't learned anything new. You hadn't identified any new birds or bugs or, you know. And so you got some ups and downs, and you had some reward chemicals, but it was for just operating a simulation, which is cool. But, you know, you can take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
We've been taking the activity out of our lives more and more and more and more over time. I mean, you think about, you go way back. Now you're talking about games. You know, now a lot of people aren't even going outside.
Right. Right.
Because they don't have to go outside to, you know, to meet the curiosity requirements of your brain. You know, there's a virtual outside now.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
And you go back even farther than that, you know, you've got cars. Now people aren't climbing on the back of horses, which is, by all means, I don't want to be climbing on the back of horses, and horses don't want us climbing on the back of them.
Right.
So that's a good deal. But there's, you know, especially in the cities, like we were overseas together, and those cities, we walked the whole thing.
Oh man, it was great.
I mean, 20,000-30,000 steps a day, easy.
Oh yeah.
And the whole city was walkable. There's sidewalks everywhere. There's paths, bike paths. You know, it was just easy. You could do it.
Oh, yeah. It was beautiful.
You know, down near where I'm at in Atlanta, not walkable.
It's not drivable either, man.
Yeah, it's not drivable either.
I don't even think people really even trust their kids just being outside like that anymore and walking anywhere. I don't know if you all saw it or not, but this lady got arrested for letting her 10-year-old walk a mile. And somebody brought the point of, like, when we were younger, we were just outside, and your parents might not have no idea where you were, but they knew you were coming home. You could be in, like, the next city over.
Vince, me and you would walk all the way to the mall.
All the time.
Yeah.
By that busy highway.
Farther than the mall.
Yeah,
we walk
too.
All the way to the mall, the Toys R Us. Yeah.
I say that's government overreach right there.
Yeah.
They're doing too much.
That was before we even had a bike. Like, we didn't really have a bike. We're just like, we're going to walk.
Yeah.
I think even when I had a bike, I still, walking was just a normal thing for us. So.
Oh, man. We got to be home at a certain time. Now we're running.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we race each other. Man, who's the fastest? Mm-hmm. I bet I could beat you to that tree over there.
Well, the fastest was not me. I know that much.
Man, it was just fun. And you stay fit when you're walking all the time. When you're in a society, in a community where people don't walk, they do not stay fit. When they're just driving all the time and that's all they have.
No, they don't stay fit.
Driving to get somewhere where they sit down, to get up and drive somewhere else where they sit down. Oh, man. You start, your body taking shape like it belong in a chair after a while.
Yeah, we're not even really designed to sit down that much. That's not what our keister was put there for.
Right.
That's dangerous as well.
We're all doing exactly that right now.
Right now, okay. Yeah. I think it's all right a little bit though, but as long as
it's unavoidable,
we gotta like God can say, we gotta get after it. You gotta
right,
you know, grab a dumbbell and you know, or at least take a walk or hike.
That's the plan.
It's all about balance. So the technology can be disruptive, but at the same time, we could benefit from it. But we have to. Be aware, understand how it's affecting us, and then we have to be disciplined and create new habits, I think, that help us balance out our relationship with the technology.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And then, so we were talking about cars. You go back even farther, you got bikes. Bikes is like the stepping stone, because it's not quite as strenuous as walking or running, but it's still physical.
Yeah.
Bikes are great. I love bikes. I mean, because we live in a pace of life and in such vast areas that walking or running is really not practical for moving around at all. But a bike is a pretty decent compromise.
Yeah. It'd take on some of the wear and tear for the terrain we have to deal with.
Oh, yeah. I like bikes. But you know, the bikes nowadays, you don't even have to pedal.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
That's true.
Yeah. You just jump on there or you just start pedaling and then the motor starts.
Then you can get it right on Amazon.
And if you got Neuralink, you don't even have to order it. You just have to think about ordering it. It'll just show up.
That was, they told us about that on The Matrix. Remember The Matrix?
Mm-hmm.
And Neo plugs in. And, you know, I know Kung Fu and all that.
I can't believe it was 25 years ago.
Crazy, right?
Was it that long?
Man.
I guess it was, because it came out in 99, right?
Yeah.
We've been warned about a lot of things, but here we are creating robots and AI.
By The Simpsons?
Yeah. By The Simpsons. Yeah. That's wild.
I'm conflicted with The Simpsons because... Is The Simpsons, are they predicting the future or are they just speaking the stuff into existence? Like they said it, so this is what's happening.
Right. I mean, in a way, Is it a different thing or is it the same thing?
Right.
Like to predict the future and to speak something in existence. Maybe it's actually the same thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe it can be the same thing, right?
Right. Cows will fly.
You know, well, I mean, maybe it's like tapping into a parallel universe where it's already true, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, we can go this way. Or we can go this way.
Sure.
And, you know, The Simpsons is like, well, check this out.
Yeah, look what we saw.
Look what we saw.
Well, we didn't know, but we do.
And then other stuff like elevators.
Elevators, me and you.
Which is so great, because if I had to carry all this stuff up here, I'd be so angry. But, you know, stairs, one of the best ways to get exercise, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stairs are a beast if you take it more than just a few of them.
Yeah. If you're not fit, you're winded from the ground floor to the next floor up.
I know that, Phil.
If you fit, you might be winded too if you take enough floors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you get a little higher up there before you got to stop and catch your breath.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you might not stop, but you just might be like, you know, hyperventilating. You know, like, have you ever climbed stairs on a tower, you know, like 20, 30 stories, and just instead of taking the elevator, just like, let me just see what it's like to take the stairs.
There was like a fire watch tower out in the woods somewhere. I do not remember where it was, but we climbed up to the top of that, and it's, you know, it sits, you end up way above the canopy. Looking, you can see in all directions. It's basically to look out for forest fires.
Oh, wow.
And that was a lot of stairs.
And that's for work.
No, it wasn't for work.
Well, not you, but that's somebody has to do that for work.
Oh, that's somebody's work, for sure.
Oh, yeah, somebody. Unless they got a rocket pack.
Yeah, go check for fires.
Or you smell something weird.
Oh, on second thought, come back down. No. Go back up.
But yeah, I mean, with all the technology, we still have to find a way to meet the needs of our body. And it's more than just sleep and eating. But there's like all those other things, and drinking water, you know, but there's those other things that we need, not to just stay alive, but to stay well. You know, a lot of people don't, like we mentioned on another episode, you know, we talked about sunlight and vitamin D. And if you're in the house utilizing, you know, technology, TV, computer, cell phone or whatever, in other words, you're not outside exercising, walking to the store, walking to meet with friends or whatever, just getting out in the sun, you're missing out. You're missing out on that sunlight. And without that, you're going to stay alive, but the quality of your life is not going to be the same. Also, the longevity you have may not be the same, but you're not going to feel as good.
Your immune system is not going to be as good.
You have to plan to want to do these things. I know one thing that I saw is called the 20-20-20. So if you're one of those kinds of people who has to work and look at screens, it says you take 20 minutes of time on your screen, then you take 20 seconds to take a break and you focus on something that's, I want to say it's like 20 feet away from you. And they say you keep doing that every 20 minutes.
I feel like corporate America has put their influence on that, because it used to be the 20-20, where every 20 minutes you stop for 2 minutes and look at something at least 20 feet away.
They said, we're losing productivity.
We're losing productivity.
Move
they
the
want to
decimal.
Stop and smoke. They want to stop and look at stuff.
Absolutely. But that's how it is.
Well, they think they're humans. We hire these people to be machines. Oh, they are humans. I mean, yeah.
It's just crazy how times have changed, because now it's like you got the standing desk. Anything to keep you working, but the mats now.
Yeah, The mats? What are the mats?
The mats where it's like just to take the pressure off of your feet, your knees.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
They also have like grounding mats. You plug into the little circled notch in your outlet and it grounds you to the earth. So instead of going out barefoot or touching a tree or something, you just step on a grounding mat.
Mm-hmm. You got to have these boots for work that you can walk on big rocks with that won't twist or conform too much or won't allow rocks to puncture or to really mess with your stride too much. And they're just so expensive because of all the things that they're doing to these boots, like to anti-fatigue technology, so you can walk more and work more.
Sounds safe.
It sounds too safe, man. Foot going to get all weak.
Right. As soon as you take the shoe off.
Yeah, you need some sandals made out of some old tires and a piece of rope.
The Jesus sandals.
Yeah, Jesus sandals. Get the nice strong feet, foot muscles and stuff.
Back then they had stronger ankles.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, they did.
And, you know, shoes, that's a disruptive technology because, and it doesn't have to be as disruptive as it is. One thing is it separates you from the earth and from the electrical field of the earth, so you're not grounded when you go outside. But the other thing is the shape of shoes. They're like, most shoes come to a point instead of being shaped like a foot, and most people's feet aren't shaped like a point. And so, you know, what happens is you wear these shoes and over the years, your feet become deformed. Instead of your toes being free like your fingers, they start to stack up like this. And, you know, how's that going to affect your mobility? You know, how you're firing the muscles in your legs and hips and all of that, you know, very, very disruptive.
Yeah.
You have some brands of shoes that are like kind of getting hip to it, like designing these minimalist barefoot, you know, style shoes and things like that. But I think most of the big brands are still making shoes that aren't very good for feet.
Yeah. Think about high heels.
Oh, man.
They do so much damage to your feet, especially if you wear them on a regular basis. They affect the muscles in the legs. They damage the ankles and the knees, the lower back, just so that you look a certain way.
Yeah. This is crazy that a lot of shoes, like, we try and wear, and it's, all of us have different foot shapes. And it's like the support isn't there for everybody.
The good thing is there's a lot of brands out there that make shoes for different types of feet.
Yeah.
And they didn't used to be like that. We all used to wear the same type of Vans or the same, you know, the old flat Air Force Ones or
the
flat Chuck Taylors.
A lot of those were so uncomfortable.
Oh, man. Yeah. Especially if you have wide feet. And like, I'd like to see more, like, kind of like, I guess you would call it bespoke shoe companies. Like send us a scan of your foot and we're going to make this shoe that you want, but we're going to, you know, custom tailor it for your foot.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it was only recently that I even heard about a company that makes socks at a certain size.
Like instead of just large, medium, small.
Well, instead of like size 6 to size 13, you can get a size 6. Or a size 13. If I buy the smaller of the two socks that are available, then like the heel patch is like in the center of my arch. And then if I buy the bigger one, the heel patch is up above my ankle.
And it is weird how that works.
It can probably wear out less. I'd imagine if there's built, you know, at least as well as the other ones that aren't as precisely sized, that they would wear out slower because they wouldn't be like shifting around. And then the heels that a lot of times they reinforce, they would actually be on the heel.
On the heel. Just makes too much sense.
make too much sense.
Is there anything that you all are doing or have done in your own personal life to help you adjust, or even maybe for somebody else, you know, to help them adjust with technology, dealing with technological innovations and helping find that balance?
I haven't tried this yet, and I don't know if I will yet, but I saw something today, actually, where people were trying to figure out how much better it was as far as like screen time to change your phone setting to black and white.
That's interesting.
So then your phone is not nearly as exciting to look at, so you don't look at it so much. But I'm really hoping that what I saw was wrong, but it might not be, saying that the average American looks at their screen for an average of 8 hours a day.
Sound about right.
That sounds terrible.
Yep. That's a work shift.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You working a double shift, one on your phone and one on your job.
I mean, but just think about the fact that even with that, it starts when you're young. So you're doing this for years of your life because you...
I'm not even talking about computer screens and TVs.
Right. To the little phone.
Just the phone.
Like, we're giving these kids the phone and it starts there. 3 years old.
You ever wondered what our generation is going to be like when we're old?
I feel like it ain't going to be good.
Like, you think about, like, a lot of the people who are older than us that, like, wore their pants real, real low, sagged really, really bad, they can't walk now.
Yeah.
And now our generation is staring at screens constantly, and you know nobody's doing the 20-20-20 or the 22-20.
Of course not.
Yeah.
I'm here trying to get our website up and going, and I'm easily burn up 2.5 hours without looking away from this thing.
Oh, man. It's easy to do, too. It's like you get on something that's so stimulating and you compress the time. That has a compression effect. It's like the time compresses.
You don't think about it.
Subjectively, you know.
Yeah, stimulating is a good word for it because it's not always a good thing.
Yeah, overstimulation, right?
The frustrations of trying to figure things out that just don't make sense. You're like, why is this not doing this?
Yeah. Aggravation.
Yeah. You're dealing with technology that's not working how you expect it to is aggravating.
Right.
When your phone don't work.
I know along my journey, just along my life experience in technology, I can remember getting frustrated with different computer related tasks that weren't working. I was trying to do one thing and I couldn't figure out how to get it to work the way I wanted. Or I'm doing the same thing that I do every time, but today it's just bugging out and I don't know what it is. And after a while, I've learned let me check all the common sense things that I know to check. And if it ain't working after that, I'm just stepping away from it. Like, I'm not going to, I'll figure out, you know, some other way. I'll come back to it later. But like, I've learned to create that boundary. And most time it benefits me. I step away from it and come back to it with a fresh mind and realize, you know, hey, it was a piece of hardware corrupted. I got to get a new, you know, this or that, or something was plugged into the computer that was causing it to act funny. But to get that clarity, sometimes what I recognize, sometimes you just got to step away from it. You know, it's like, let me be clear on every common sense thing that I know is likely to help the situation right now and do that. And if that doesn't work, unless I get another really good idea, not pie in the sky idea, like really good idea, then like, okay, I'm going to step away from it and just do something else right now.
That reminds me of something. I got a real good example about that. Years and years ago, me and a real good friend of mine, replaced an engine in a pickup truck. We got the engine put back in there, and we had to mate the transmission back to the engine in the truck. It's not on a lift or anything like that. It's sitting on the ground. It's asphalt, and we're climbing up underneath, and we're just shimmying and moving and trying to get this transmission that has to, the splines got to line up with the splines, and the little pins have to line up with the pins and everything. And the angle's got to be perfect. And we're just sitting there. We're messing with it for 30 minutes. We're frustrated. We're probably throwing tools at this point. We stop. We go get lunch. We're talking about it. We're like, oh, I don't know when we're going to get this finished. When we get done with lunch, we go back, climb up underneath, and we're talking 5 seconds. And it's right together. Just needed that break. Just needed that reset.
It helps.
Just needed to think about something else for a little while and then go back at it.
That's a great example. That's a great example there. It's kind of like when you're in school and they're teaching you. I don't know if you've ever been in school and had like a course or somebody where they teach you what they call it study habits, like yeah, the best study habits. Mm-hmm. You know, and they say, you know, don't stay up all night cramming for the exam in the morning. Get your rest. Do something to, you know, after you study, do something to take your mind away from it. Go watch a movie or something, and then, you know, get your rest at night, and then come in and, you know, refreshed. But you got to take your mind away from the task first.
Mm-hmm. There's so many different perspectives on studying or cramming for tests. I was trying to learn another language, and I was reading up on study habits to help improve absorption, I guess, or yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Adherence.
Yeah, the osmosis. And some people had like scientific approaches to it, like study for this amount of time, take this amount of break, review what you already studied, study for this amount of time, take a different size break, then go back and study, and then review. And then it was like very complicated. And I'm like, I wonder where this came from. Like, what's the science behind this? Did this just work for them? And now it's like, it's their method.
Yeah.
And
I didn't use it.
Well, I think you got to find out what works for you.
Still not fluent in that language, so maybe I should have.
Oh.
It was sound like it was trying to work this pattern of not memorizing, but learning. Because once you follow the same trends, then you're just kind of working on memorizing things. But the staggered nature of that type of lesson is like, oh, I'm really learning this.
But it was also trying to dig in on the idea of stepping away from it and letting your mind reset and then going back to it, and it being, instead of it being a lesson, now it's you remembering a lesson. You're reviewing it. You're remembering something you already learned.
Yeah, and that's like the test portion.
Yeah, reinforcement.
And it's pretty good.
For me, the best way to learn something was always to try to teach it to somebody else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which sounds wild for something you don't know to try to teach somebody something, but it always sunk in better if I was trying to teach somebody something. I always came out with a better understanding of it myself.
It's like you're working with the information from two directions. You're like taking the information in, but then you're putting the information out. And so you just created a more complete connection to that subject matter, I suppose. Go ahead, Vince.
I was going to say, I work better when I do, like, actually do it. Because, like, right now, I just started this job. And, like, they've been telling me, like, a lot of different things. And so it doesn't stick until I just do it myself. So that's been working for me.
Oh, yeah. learning by doing.
Well, you remember when we were in school, learning a foreign language, you go into the class, they say, you know, bonjour or hola or whatever you're trying to learn. And then they just give you a whole bunch of words. Then they give you like the, you know, like verb forms, and they're trying to teach you like grammar.
Right.
Right off the bat. That's not how you learned your native language.
Not at all. That never worked for me either.
Yeah, you started off with mama, dada, baba. You didn't start off with, you know, to eat.
Yeah.
You weren't learning infinitives.
I think it's ridiculous. I think they should teach you to speak before they try to teach you all that. Just to speak and to understand. They might not fit their template curriculum, but it just makes more sense. Especially for somebody like me, that never worked for me.
Yeah.
I think they call it immersion.
Immersion.
Yeah, immersion learning.
Best way to learn. Just get into the funk of it. And I remember, Zach, one thing you brought up offline was as far as like, you know, technology and learning and different things was multitasking. And I was thinking about multitasking because, so I think about it two ways, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. But I think about it in a constructive way and in a destructive way. Because I know I've used it in ways that where it's helped me study. So I'm using it like kind of strategically, maybe taking something boring, but taking something else that's stimulating and doing them both at the same time. Two tasks that use maybe a different part of the brain, or one that's more passive and one that's more active. But then, of course, there's other times where it's just, you know, one thing being a detriment to the other. I'd been able to focus better on this if I wasn't distracted by that type of situation.
Moron.
Yeah. Well, it kind of makes sense when you can, you know, combine doing something with the conscious part of your brain and something with the subconscious part of your brain, like studying or doing some work on a treadmill. That is multitasking, but you don't have to think about walking. You know, once you start, you can just walk subconsciously. That's an easy thing and a great example. But yeah. You know, in general, you know, you don't want to be working podcasting while you're driving.
Right.
Yeah, don't want to be doing that.
Because you think about it, you have 100% attention span if you're lucky. And then if you go and give a chunk of that to one task, you only have the remainder for the other task. If you're texting and giving your phone 90% of your attention while you're driving, you're only driving with 10% of your attention.
Right. And then that averages out because you're going back and forth between tasks, you know, text, C, A, car, you know, left turn, T, you know, you're going back and forth between the two.
Some people don't even do that. You drive past them and they just looking down at their phone.
It's they like, got the neural connect in their car, the Neuralink. They just. But like one example I use from studying, one example of when multitasking worked well for me was studying. I was studying for a certification for becoming a personal trainer. Overall, most of the information is interesting because it's a field that I enjoy, but some of the stuff is really dry. And you don't have to just read the book because now everything is on ebook or on audio or on video. And so there's an online lesson where you can go through the personal training certification manual, but it's on an online format. And so what I would do is I would have my phone and I'd play like Call of Duty or something that, you know, I knew how to play. You know, I played plenty of times, but I would listen to the audio. And so I'm kind of like how you might listen to an audiobook while you're driving. I'm listening to the audio of the personal training certification program where they're talking about you know, the right and left ventricles of the heart, and you know, this skill test, this type of scale of exertion, and this and that, and all these technical things. But I'm just playing the game, so I'm stimulated, and I'm like, you know, okay, I've studied for 4 hours today. Never could have did it if I was just, you know, I'd be bored out of my mind. Just click, click. Okay, another page. Gosh. But I was able to do that. And then I also turned around and did another certification for something I was interested in. But it was like kind of strategically using those two things together. On the flip side, I've noticed that if I'm working on a task, but I'm daydreaming at the same time, that task is not going to be as efficient, you know?
Oh, yeah. That happens to me when I read. It happens to me a lot. If I'm reading a book, I'll be reading the lines on the page, and then it'll remind me of something, or it'll spark some thought, and I'll think about something, and I'll be off thinking about whatever, and then I'll realize that I'm in thought, and I'll come back and be like 4 or 5 pages later in the book. I had those thoughts, but I still looked through, although I didn't read, I just looked at all of the words and continued flipping pages.
Yep. Yeah. That's a weird thing that can happen. And
And I'm like trying to go back and figure out where I was.
Yeah. Like I remember reading it, but I don't remember paying attention. And there's this thing. There was a man who I think it was I had a teacher, Warren Blank, while I was in school, and he was like a leadership teacher. He was a guest teacher. And he was talking about like a gap. I forget exactly what they call it, but it's like, it's a thing that the brain does when you're focused on something, where after a certain amount of time, it just stops focusing. And then it, after a little time passes, it focuses, it refocuses. But this is just a natural part of how the human brain works. And then when you're aware of that, if you're like teaching, or you know, maybe you're explaining something important to a group of people, when you're aware of that, you can, you know, work some strategies into your delivery to compensate for that, whether you're repeating or reiterating something, because you know that amongst the group, somebody is in that gap where they just, their brain went off somewhere for a few seconds and then came back. And so you got to expect that. And then you work that into your teaching or your guidance or whatever you're doing.
It's good to have the forethought to consider that when you're teaching.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I wonder what the science is behind that, though. I wonder if it's like a survival thing.
It could be.
Oh, yeah. Like how it came up, like how it came about.
Like something that just your brain's like, you've been looking at this for too long. You need to make sure there isn't a lion standing behind you.
You know, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it really does.
Just being aware of your surroundings. And
I think people are very poor with paying attention to their surroundings as it is.
Oh, yeah. Especially with all these devices.
Yeah.
It's like these devices almost like that. They figured out how to bypass that gap.
Yeah.
These devices draw you in, and they just keep going from one thing to the next.
Oh, yeah.
You try to watch a YouTube video, and it's just like it's YouTube, YouTube, YouTube ads. But you don't move focus while the ad's playing. You watch the little timer,
right?
Yeah,
until
yeah,
you
yeah.
can skip. It can be like 58. You're like 57, 56. Come on, gotta skip this ad.
They supposedly had like customized ads, but I still hate most of them.
Same.
Yeah.
I just want to watch my show. Come on now.
They're not reading me too well. Diabetes medication and
all the irrelevant commercials coming through.
I hate the ads that I end up wanting to watch.
Me and some friends of mine watched a movie, but remotely. Does that make sense?
There's a word for that, isn't it? like a watch party or something?
Yeah.
Something like that. But these ads pop up for whatever pharmaceutical, you know, just insert pharmaceutical here. And some of these friends live in Canada where pharmaceutical commercials aren't legal.
Oh, that's great.
And they're like, well, I think, I could be wrong, I think there's only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical commercials.
Oh, man.
I think it's the United States and New Zealand.
Yeah, that's, I don't want to see them.
But I can't cite.
Keep that between you and your doctor. I don't want to see the commercials about you. You're this and you're that. I'm not interested.
They're trying to empower people to think that they're doctors. You think I need Ozempic? What about Xarelto?
Ozempic, that's
you just twisted your ankle. You don't need
you twisted your ankle because you were too big and you didn't have enough Ozempic in your system.
Yeah. Yeah, you stubbed your toe. You don't need a statin drug.
I heard some things about Ozempic lately.
Which things?
So one thing they were saying it came from like the, I guess the active ingredient or something comes from venom, like some lizard venom. They were saying that it was it has some really bad, I guess, medium or long term side effects. So a lot of people that were on it, I think one of them I heard was something they were calling stomach paralysis.
That's crazy.
Yeah, where someone's stomach stops doing what the stomachs are supposed to do, and they can't keep their food down, and it supposedly lasts for years. And so I heard this on, you know, some social media stuff, so you had to do your own research out there. But yeah, it sounded wild. I was never interested in taking anything like that anyway. You know, I'm very much at a camp of like, you know, get outside, run, take a dietary approach.
Well, Ozempic wasn't designed for weight loss. It was designed for the treatment of like type 2 diabetes.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Which I'm not saying this is a medical fact, but my opinion, type 2 diabetes is just a symptom of another thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think most of the diseases are that way.
I think type 2 diabetes is just a symptom of, you know, atherosclerosis or some sort of cardiac problem. I personally believe it's completely reversible, preventable, just by taking care of your heart.
Yeah. I think most diseases are reversible, but they may not be medically reversible. Like, it's not, it may not be a pill that you can take or a medical procedure that you could undergo. Because it's a lifestyle related thing. So as long as you keep living the same lifestyle, you're going to keep getting the same health results out of it. One interesting thing about pharmaceutical drugs is some of them did not start as pharmaceutical drugs. They started as like a health supplement. And then someone gets a hold of it, gets wind of it. They're like, this stuff is really strong. Let's, you know, do something and work this into a patent and, you know, sell it as a drug for this disease and that disease.
I think there's a lot of weird stuff like that. You think about, what is it? What's the little blue pill? What's that called again?
On the Matrix, that was the
Viagra.
No, yeah, Viagra. Viagra was not designed for that purpose. Viagra was for your heart.
Okay,
and this thing makes your heart.
Yeah, and then they figured out that thing. But what is it like? Like Listerine, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was like originally a floor cleaner.
Oh, that's crazy.
Something wild like that.
Strong enough to be.
That's crazy.
Like Coca-Cola.
The original recipe.
Yeah, paint remover.
Yeah, sodas. You used to have to go to the pharmacy to get a soda.
Really?
And it was a cure for sadness.
Are you making that up?
No.
No. I wish I was.
It makes you happy.
Well, Coca-Cola did used to have some suspect ingredients in there.
I feel like it still does.
Hence the name.
Some pharmaceutical grade ingredients.
Yeah. Definitely. And they still have proprietary ingredients. You don't know what's in there.
Yeah, the natural flavors.
Natural flavor. I can't get away from them, man. I see more natural flavors today than I've ever seen. And I'm wondering if they're just cheaping out and they're like, you know, hey, we could put cinnamon in there, but, you know, cinnamon's getting a little expensive. We're just going to put these natural flavors to taste like cinnamon in there and save some money. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we got all these cockroaches and these cockroach legs taste like cinnamon. So we're just going to grind these up and put them in there and call it natural.
Oh, man.
I made that up, by the way.
As far as we know.
It's going to be carbon neutral.
Right.
Man. Oh, yeah. I don't like, I'll get foods that I remember buying before from the store, and I never remember natural flavors being in there. And so I'll buy them, and I'll get them home, and then I'm looking at the back of the label. I'm like, hold up. Natural flavors, like, when did they put that in there? You know, I don't particularly like it. I don't like it because
there's not really that much of a legal requirement to use the word natural.
Found in nature as opposed in a...
When it comes to food, for me, the word natural holds no water. It means nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not a certification.
But some people look to that and think it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, that's natural. I'm going to eat it. It's natural. We got to get this because it's natural.
All natural. And it could be some nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about it.
There's a lot of stuff out there that's natural that can kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything natural is not good. It's not good for you.
Like the Ozempic venom.
Yeah, the venom.
Natural flavors.
Mm-hmm. Lead and mercury are natural, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Uranium is natural, isn't it? So you gotta be careful reading between the lines sometime.
Yep.
Ask questions. Implore.
Explore.
Explore. Explore and implore.
Don't implode.
Yeah. Don't implode.
Yeah, don't implode.
No, do not implode. Do not.
Technology's gotten wild, and newer cars, like, record, especially cars that update over the air, they record driving data, and some auto manufacturers have relationships with insurance companies.
Yep.
To share your driving habits with insurance companies.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I used to have a insurance company that I was signed up with, and they would take money off of your insurance bill if you plug this little device.
If you plug the thing in. Yep. Well, now you don't even have to. If you have a new car, it's in the fine print. Some of those cars. Not all of them.
Some of these cars are just doing too much. These new cars. And I'm like, you know, I always wonder if we get some, you know, I guess there's different ways it could happen, but, you know, say something, some wave, giant EMF comes from outer space and just knocks all the computers out. Like, what are we going to do?
I know. Somebody at the hotel backed into the front of my truck, and it was in the shop for 15 weeks.
No one's prepared.
Is it just because all the different, they had to maneuver around all the different tech in there, and they just didn't know?
Just to pieces and parts, and, you know, and then when they find something new, now they have to report that to the insurance company, and then the insurance company's got to try to negotiate with them about that, and then they gotta, it's a back and forth, and it took forever.
Yeah, a terribly designed process.
It took forever. The worst thing is I gave them my truck and drove my wife's car, and while her car was parked, somebody ran into the back of it. They fell asleep in one of those car washes that you put it in neutral for.
Oh, wow.
And when they got to the end of the car wash, they were still asleep, and they just rolled out down the hill, across the parking lot, right into the back of her car.
That sounded like a freak accident.
It was like the car wash must have been like white noise. Just
it must have been.
Oosh. Oosh. I can't stay awake. Oosh.
And we had just gotten that car the week before.
That's
man.
A freak accident.
That's terrible. Oh, that's terrible.
I had to rent a car. until we got her car back.
I like old school cars, man. Just, I do appreciate that I could hit a button to roll the window up. I mean, when they're designed right, when they're designed to, you know, without the planned obsolescence in there, it's nice. But at the same time, you know, I think there should be a backup to some of these digital systems, you know, because if that button that rolls the window up stops functioning when the window is halfway down and it starts raining, you don't have a plan B. You don't have a backup system where you could just crank the window like you used to be able to.
It happens to people every day.
Like, why is there no backup system for that? Like, just a little switch to where you could maybe hit a switch and then just push it up with your hand or something. Like, some,
or even just like pop a little hole open and put your ratchet in there.
Yeah, something like that. Like, that would be less convenient, but that would work.
They want us to spend money.
Yeah, that planned obsolescence, man.
That's crazy.
I like the older stuff, you know. I think my ideal car would be stick shift, handbrake. You know, I enjoy the tech, but as far as something having lasting value, you know, it's not as reliable. And then they do a lot of things for you. Like, you got cars that change lanes for you, or you try to change, or like it detects a line there and you're trying to change lanes, but because you didn't signal yet, it's like preventing you from changing. I'm like, that's doing too much.
Hell,
that's doing too much. Like, if you don't know how to drive, you just don't need to be behind the wheel.
They have cars that will parallel park for you. I don't want to be in a car that's trying to parallel park.
Especially knowing that these cars can mess up and crash.
Cameras and sensors.
Yeah, well, you got mud on one of the cameras or something. And it just kind of like stalls out halfway in the parking lot.
Or this little moth flies by.
I just trust my driving better than the car's driving.
Something happens, it's your fault.
But also, it's like, if I've been driving for 10, 20, 30 years, and now this thing is wanting to do it for me, and it's like, you know, I've actually been good. Like, I don't need that. I don't need the car to change lanes for me. Now, some of the tech is really cool, though. Some of the new tech is really cool. I'm glad it's there. But it's like, if you're mixing the cool new tech with the goofy tech, it just gets to be a bit much. I'm just like, man, just give me an old car.
You still got to have Old Faithful in the driveway.
Right.
You got to have it. Yeah. You can get something new with all the bells and whistles, but you need Old Faithful in the driveway.
Something that runs if it's got fuel in it. Something you can push start.
Yeah. Yeah.
My starter's not working. I'm just going to park on this hill.
Something that's not going to fail on you because a sensor malfunctions because it got wet in the rain or something. Now you can't drive it.
I think one of the biggest problems is they put all these sensors and all this tech in cars and they cost so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before that plant, it costs more, but you get more planned obsolescence. Like, there's people that today want cars from, you know, the 50s. Some people will drive them every day.
Some other countries still have factories with the original presses still pressing out these panels for like 57 Chevrolets.
Oh, man.
And still building them just like that. Still building old, like, Volkswagen Beetles, or, you know, there's places where they're still utilizing all those old tools to build the old cars.
That's interesting. But, like, just think about that. And then a car from the 50s, that's what? That's over 70 years ago. Are they going to want the cars of today 70 years from now? I don't think so. I can't see it. I can't.
There might be a few that they're like, oh, that's a classic. That's cool.
It's going to be a headache, though, because all the computers are going to be burnt out. Yeah, all the plastic's going to be rotted. All the computers and chips and sensors are going to be burnt out. They're like, what am I going to do with this?
That touchscreen's going to look like the bottom of a used DVD
I'm going to want a Cybertruck 50 years from now.
That looks bad brand new.
Oh, man. It looks like something that's not meant to drive on. It looked like a Mars rover or something. Nice. Something that's built to just drive on a different planet.
It's probably where they got the idea from.
Yeah, Mars rover for the man who wants to go to Mars. It makes sense. I mean, he's like 11 years old up here. But even still, with styling aside, I've seen them up close, and they look bad. Like, not well-made bad.
I hadn't noticed that part, but I haven't really seen very many of them.
I have. I don't like the way they look either. Seen
maybe like three of them.
Can't stand them.
You don't like them?
Mm-hmm. Very ugly car.
Yeah, they're not for everybody, for sure.
I like that they're different. I like that they don't look like every other car out there. I probably wouldn't get one if I was in the market for a brand new truck. That probably wouldn't be it. I appreciate the creativity. If I was out in the market to get one, I'd probably get something different. I'll almost certainly get something different. It is a neat looking thing, though. The feeling I had seeing a Cybertruck was like the feeling I would have like in a museum somewhere or like an art gallery, you know. And some people make art and it looks different ways. Some of it looks weird. Some of it looks bizarre. Some of it looks, you know, minimalist impression. And seeing the Cybertruck was like one of those moments. It was just like, oh.
Stay behind the line.
Stay behind the
line. Stay in the museum.
Don't get too close.
You can't touch it. You're going to have your handprints all over it because it's just like sheets of stainless steel.
Some of the ones I've seen up close, it's just you can see where every fingerprint was on the stainless.
Yeah. Right near the door, you see all this. Yeah, da, 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 da. And then where else? Just all the touch points, you can tell. If you ever rob a Tesla truck and they do forensics, they're going to get your print. They're going to get your prints, definitely. If you don't have gloves, they're going to get your prints. I see where he broke in right there.
You probably feel them touching your hand just by touching the print on the truck. It's like, I can feel this. Oh, it's not.
I saw a crash test video of one and it was bad.
Really? They're not. What was bad about it? Did it like explode or something? Or
it's like it hit on the front and the body didn't crumble real bad. The people got hit around like you'd expect on a front end collision, but the back, like it hit, and even like the back suspension and stuff broke and the wheels like went forward underneath the car.
So it had some weak points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just turned into a boat.
Yeah.
Wheels break off. Y'all think he's gonna make it to Mars?
Nope.
If he does, I don't think he'll make it back.
Oh man. Hey.
Stay up there. He might not want to make it back.
Making it back is that's a big trip. It's a major trip right there. And then what do you do when you get there?
I guess let us know he made it.
Yeah.
Well, I won't be listening.
Eat space food.
Space food.
I would think that they would need to like terraform something first, like put a dome on it or something and like terraform it. Grow some food, grow some trees, send a few birds over there first so they could fly around inside the dome. And
way too intelligent for the type of stuff he does.
Shit.
Thank y'all for joining Nook and Cranium. Make sure to check out our socials, like and subscribe. And until next time, peace.